Thank you, Denise. John Foran, welcome to KABU again.
Thanks so much, Bill.
John Foran again teaches at UC Santa Barbara. His specialties are climate crisis, global climate justice movements, sustainable development, building better futures. John is also a co-founder of the organization System Change, Not Climate Change, and he publishes a good deal on its website, and even more on the website Resilience. 2 weeks ago, we talked to John on the severity of climate change, particularly in the Global South, now in the Global South, coming to you soon in much more severe ways, and also how temperatures are rising fast if that continues, and there's really a good chance of human extinction. Today, we'll be discussing the most interesting response, or rather non-response, to climate change by corporate America and also the U.S. military. What a fascinating story they are. Now nearly all Republicans are committed to the view that humans did not cause climate change and is really not likely to develop into a problem. But what's interesting is that corporate America, and in fact the U.S. military, don't share that view. They are taking climate change very seriously. They accept the message of climate scientists and they are acting. But of course, not in ways that could save the planet. In the second part of this interview, we'll discuss what must be done and what they are not doing. But first, we'll discuss what corporations and the U.S. military are doing, why, and why it's so inadequate. John, tell us the story first. Maybe we can begin with Exxon. It's so stark.
Okay, sure. Well, Exxon is well-known now because it's being taken to court by the state of New York. The Attorney General of New York has taken Exxon and other major oil companies to court for basically knowing about climate change, their own climate scientists telling them this way back in the 70s, and being quite clear that climate change is real, the corporation then making sure that that news stayed inside the corporation. And looking at it now, it's sort of criminally reckless to have done that, and that's the basis of the lawsuit. And there are other kinds of interesting lawsuits directed at corporations in general and in particular for causing some of the severe impacts that we're seeing, for example, erosion of shore up in Alaska where people live. Young people have suits against major corporations for destroying their future, both in the United States and in the Netherlands. And so the courts are being used in interesting ways, starting to be used in interesting ways to take on the corporations, which are bent by their own logic to make short-term profit for their shareholders at all costs.
Yeah, one of the ways, of course, and they're sort of prudent men in a weird way, only with regard to their assets and their, in a very, very narrow way, that with regard to their assets, the company's assets, and their salaries. Exxon and I think Shell have not just, they haven't just recognized climate change, they've acted upon it to protect the, and they want to protect their assets. They've raised the height of their oil platforms, right, in various places to make sure that in a huge storm, their big assets, and those oil platforms can be $500 million, $1 billion apiece, that they're not going to be swamped in a huge storm. They know climate change is happening, and they are really acting.
That is true, and it's almost humorous to watch it if it wasn't so tragic. I think it shows that there are different kinds of rationality and that humans have certain capabilities to be reasonable under certain very limited parameters, and we're less good at being rational in thinking really about the consequences down the road of everything that we do. And I think that sort of split accounts for how they get away with it, because they're banking also literally on the fact that the rest of us are also so involved in our lives and trying to, you know, make life as survivable and joyful as possible here in Trump's America, that we're not able to devote either a lot of our thinking or a lot of our time to activism against them. But I think they're mistaken.
Yeah. Tell us, there are other, all, it seems to me most of corporate America in one way or another is in fact trying to protect themselves and protect their industry. There's also, I think the really interesting, one of the most interesting and important struggles is being waged by the investor-owned utilities like PGE and Pacific Power and Duke Energy and on and on and on, and their financiers, who have a huge stake in saving the investor-owned utilities. After all, they financed it all. They want to minimize and destroy small-scale energy developments or city, local, municipal energy and public energy. What are they doing now to protect their? They want to protect their monopoly and protect their profits. Tell us that story.
Well, that's right. And here in California is a particularly good place to size up the sort of state of that struggle between the utilities, again, largely fossil fuel, overwhelmingly fossil fuel producing energy entities, and communities, which, like all the polls show, most Americans want renewable energy. Most Americans think climate change is a real danger. And so there's a movement now, energy democracy or community choice, around this question that communities might be able to circumvent the utilities if they don't switch to renewables and go ahead and try and make other arrangements. And of course, utilities don't like renewable energy, particularly solar and wind, because they are decentralized. They are suitable for communities. They can work on a smaller scale without an enormous investment in a grid that is required for fossil fuels. And so that's the battle being fought out. And again, that's being fought politically and legally, and we're kind of watching that to see what happens. But of course, the utilities are in a position to fight that battle. And of course, also in the current political atmosphere, increasingly the law and regulations are being sort of loosened up in their favor. And again, that's a very important battle and a very important struggle to watch. And you can think of it as the utilities, the banks, and the corporations are kind of a triumvirate that basically the elephant in the room, of course, is the whole global capitalist economy. And what we're talking about ultimately is whether capitalism can get us muddle through this crisis, or whether we're really going to have to think well beyond capitalism if we hope to come out at the other end of it in one piece.
Yeah, and tell us a little bit, remind people, I sometimes watch sports events. I hate myself for doing it, but it's an addiction I acquired very early in life. But I watch these sports events some and then turn them off, thank God, quickly. But Chevron has been doing a huge amount of advertising, calling attention to its experiments, that we are a green company and we are working on alternative energy. What do you make of that? Not only BP did, some of the other oil companies did it early and then they quit because they just weren't any good at alternative energy.
Oh, that's right. I mean, that goes in the category of laughable as well. The problem, of course, is these are commercial spots on television with audiences, and we're being bombarded by conflicting messages, and that's all they have to do. They know that all they have to do is create enough uncertainty in people's minds or enough of a kind of good time feeling associating their products with the sports that they are addicted to and enjoy watching, and they can get away with it, so they think. And the classic case, as you started to allude to, is BP Oil in the UK, which back in the early 2000s said stood for Beyond Petroleum.
Yes.
And, the word for all of this is greenwashing, and it's a well-known corporate strategy, and it's trying to take the green that is the right thing to do in terms of the environment and factoring in all the ecological costs of how we live, And then just twisting it in their direction because they have the means to do that.
Yeah, of course, greenwashing is, you know, one form of hypocrisy. But then there's that old saw that hypocrisy is vice's tribute to virtue. Well, they're in fact, in those ads, it's a double-edged sword because they're sort of acknowledging that we have a problem. But I guess for each of these individual companies, that's okay.
They are. That's right. And, you know, that's a sign of the times. At a certain point, the reality, the physical reality of climate change, it's unavoidable. You can't help but see it. It becomes much more than the elephant in the room. It starts to crush us. And we talked about that last time in the extreme weather that now here in the United States, even wealthy communities are subject to. So those are the sort of what they have to, that's the ultimate limit against which, as Bill McKibben likes to say, you know, you can't compromise with the laws of physics or with nature in that sense. And you know, that's why they sort of haltingly talk about this and why the military takes it seriously in their planning and so forth. But their fatal flaw or limitation is that they can't think beyond the present economic and political arrangements, and so they're left with half measures that simply won't do.
Yeah, we should call people's attention to the military. It's a quite fat U.S. military. It's a very fascinating story. We won't be able to really get into it. Let me do a station ID, and then we can spend a couple minutes on the military before we get into what should be done the huge risks they're taking in there. In any event, this is KABU Radio, 90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon. Bill Resnick here for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to John Foran, who's a scholar activist. He writes a lot. He's also very active in building movements in California, movements really that are threatening some of the big corporate apparatus, but they're fighting back. It's a really interesting story. John, let's just call attention to what the military is doing. It's just so, I mean, it's fun to realize it, although it's, of course, horrible in its impact.
Well, the U.S. military, the first shocking fact is how much of our budget is devoted to it and how much the United States spends on its military, and basically we spend more than our next 10 competitors combined. So we should have the number one military in the world with all of that, and we do. But with that comes the fact that the military is also the number one consumer of fossil fuels as an entity anywhere in the world, and thus sort of one of the prime reasons that we have a climate crisis. And taking those two facts together, you know, the writing is on the wall. It would be a very simple and smart, but very radical and almost unthinkable thing to do is to severely cut the military budget and to use those resources, to direct those resources to things that we really need to cope with this crisis, whether that be education, whether that be healthcare, or whether that be sort of direct subsidizing of the transition to fossil fuel, to renewable energy, because let's not forget that fossil fuels not only have all the money on their side, they also have incredible subsidies and tax breaks and regulatory breaks that make it that much harder to switch to renewable, which in a fair fight would be an easy and obvious thing to do.
Yeah, I did a little studying of the military last night and climate change. The Trump administration, as we well know, is thinks climate change is a hoax and it's going to go away. The military has a different idea. They're extremely worried about climate change. So a number of recent things come out of Congress reports, legislative changes. One of them, of course, is the military appropriations budget that the Trump administration looked at, and they cut out all expenditures for climate change. On the other hand, there's their policy report, which Congress has approved, which calls for added monies and effort to combat climate change and to deal with the national security implications of climate change. And anyway, we won't go on. I could. There's so many just hilarious quotes from military, including James Mattis, who's now the Secretary of Defense, about the problems of climate change and how it's going to affect U.S. national security. And there also, of course, they talk about the immense costs of shipping barrels of oil to our advanced bases all over the world. And wouldn't it be so much better if we had solar-powered mobility machines so that our guerrilla forces that are fighting in maybe 50 countries right now, one way or another, the special forces, if they could move completely silently, because internal combustion engines make noise, and they would like to be silent. And they are also making vehicles to do that, and they're developing installations. They're spending a lot of money on, in fact, solar power, solar electricity. But, of course, for their purposes of killing lots of other people. John, let's now... It seems to me both the military and our—we don't have too much time—the military and our business elite, the whole apparatus, has decided to take the risk of climate change extinguishing all of us in order to maintain themselves, and they're becoming more and more committed to the idea that they've decided that geoengineering can solve all of our problems. We can deal with carbon in the air by somehow extracting it, and many other things. That technology will save us. Tell us that story.
Well, that's another sort of ploy that is because of our inaction on climate change and because of the success of capital. Politically and economically, we're being taken right over the livable thresholds of greenhouse gases and thus ultimately global warming. And we're told we can relax because of some future as yet to be perfected technology of one kind or another will allow us to actually decarbonize and make up for the devastating errors that we're making at the moment somewhere down the road. And it's, you know, the logic of that is actually being forced on us almost as a fait accompli because of inaction and more inaction and the slow pace at which the world is waking up to the crisis. So geoengineering has to now actually, I find serious thinkers and activists, you know, have to take it seriously, not just because it's a smokescreen, but because, in fact, we are going to probably have to do that. But to use that as an excuse to continue with reckless expansion of dirty energy is the exact wrong message to take away from the necessity to do that. It simply means that we have to make that transition as quickly as possible because we're relying on uninvented technology at this point.
And that some of it could also have disastrous feedback loops, right? That's another story, though, the enormous risks of geoengineering, and yet they're making it necessary, as John Ferran just said. John, thanks so much for talking to us.
My pleasure, Bill.
Right.
Always.
Right. So long.